From WXXI News, this is Connections. I'm Evan Dawson. Our connection this hour was made in an empty office cubicle at a restaurant short one server and after at a job interview where an applicant just didn't show up. Now, maybe you've heard the word ghosting in the context of dating, where a date or a potential partner just disappears and stops responding to messages with no explanation. Now the term is being used in workplaces as an increasing number of workers are ghosting their employers or potential employers. Data shows that the problem has increased as much as 20% in the last year alone. So why are some workers blowing off interviews, not showing up as new hires, or leaving after a shift and never returning? Economists say the booming labor market is to blame. With the nation's unemployment rate at a 49-year low, some workers feel there's often better opportunities somewhere else. But some workers, especially millennial workers, according to research, say they are ghosting to teach employers a lesson. They want higher pay, better benefits, better treatment. They want to feel more valued on the job. They say ghosting is their way of striking or protesting. So have you ever ghosted an employer? Our guests this hour help us understand the trend, perhaps why it's gaining traction, or whether it really is. We'll also talk about what companies can do to try to curb the issue and some of the dynamics from the employer side and from the worker side. And we want to hear from you, especially if you've ghosted at work. No 2 weeks, no showing up, just gone. Or maybe you got offered a job, you didn't take it, no response. You showed up one time, you're gone. How do you feel about that? Let's welcome our guests for the hour. John Primo is the Director of Community and Business Services for Rochester Works. Welcome back to the program. Thanks for being here.
Thanks, Evan.
And thanks for showing up when we asked you to and not ghosting us.
Wouldn't think otherwise.
You know I had to do that one. Mary Macbeth is a branch manager for Imagine Staffing Technology. Mary, welcome to the program. Thanks for being here. And Patrick Coyle is a graduate assistant at SUNY Brockport. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
I think you're the youngest person on the panel.
I am. I have ghosted a job before.
I'm going to start with you. You have?
Well, he went right there.
So it was, I really needed a job. This was like probably 5-6 years ago. I was in college and it was like a Friday interview and I thought it was a call center job and I got the job. They gave me the training material and then I realized it was just, you were trying to call people and get them to go to for-profit colleges. And I just realized ethically that like wasn't something I could do. I didn't need a job that bad. So I didn't show up for the training.
Are you saying that for-profit colleges have some nefarious underlying? You are, yeah. Okay. Yeah. That should be. But you didn't even feel like you had to call back or write back and say, look, I've realized this isn't for me.
No.
That was that.
Yeah.
Okay. So it was for an ethical reason for you.
It was for an ethical reason, and that definitely is not a cop-out, because I just didn't want to call somebody.
Okay. All right. Well, the one part of this, and I'm going to get all of our guests on this, but I just want to follow up with one point with Patrick on this. The one part of this that I kind of don't fully have my head around yet is part of what David Farenthold in the Washington Post was tweeting about, which is the idea that, well, you know, younger adults have less in the way of social skills because they're on screens more often and they don't know how to engage in sometimes a hard conversation. Either I'm quitting, I'm going to give my 2 weeks, I'm not going to take a job, I'm not going to... I didn't fully feel like that was fair. What do you think?
Well, I mean, that there's definitely a conversation to be had there. Like, you know, people... I'm going to use my age, but I'm really even getting washed for millennial now. You know, now that I'm 28 and I really can't speak for the youths anymore.
You're like a young millennial. You're almost Gen Z.
Yeah. Am I?
91? No, you're like, yeah. You're kind of like
I'm
middle.
Dead in the middle.
Yeah.
But yeah, like people don't want to have phone conversations anymore. Like if somebody leaves me a voicemail, you might as well send me a carrier pigeon.
that is true. I don't like checking voicemail either. In fact, I see a voicemail, I'm going, oh.
Just send me a text. It's 2019.
How dare they? Yeah.
That I agree with. But does that mean that you can't have hard conversations?
I personally don't think so. I mean,
you wouldn't connect those two things.
No, it just varies. You know, I mean, it's person to person.
Okay. Mary, do you think that this trend is a thing? Is the media latching onto job ghosting too much here? What are you hearing? What do you think?
Ghosting is definitely something that's been around for some time. So it's not necessarily a trend. Ghosting being on the job, that is definitely much higher than it's ever been traditionally. So a lot of what we have seen in staffing is ghosting before an interview. So, for example, you may set a few interviews over a length of time. Only a certain percentage of those will actually show up. Most people tend to ghost when they hear that there's going to be a drug test. So typically ghosting from an interview standpoint has been around for some time, but we are absolutely seeing much more from a employment standpoint.
When it comes to how employers deal with that, does that mean you have to schedule more interviews knowing that some percentage won't be there?
It depends on the type of position. So if it's a low-end paying position or a high-volume position, yes, absolutely. You have to set more interviews to account for the amount of people that may not show.
Huh. Well, I got to ask John Primo if you think that trend carries here in Rochester. What are you seeing?
Well, you know, we're seeing more of it and hearing more of it. We're kind of unique at Rochester Works because we're on both sides. So we engage with businesses to kind of help them promote their job opportunities, you know, create visibility for them and so forth. And then we also at the career centers have staff that are working with numerous job seekers that are, you know, obviously trying to get those jobs. And we've heard stories, you know, over the years about, you know, it's very common. I think what Mary said is in the interview process, to me, that's not new. That doesn't surprise me. I mean, we've seen that. I think maybe the magnitude or the volume of it might be, you know, in an uptick. But I think what surprises me more so and what we're hearing more of from the business partners that we work with is that there are literally people that will show up for a job one day and just not show. And they're gone. And they don't respond. They don't react. You can't engage them. And that, to me, is somewhat troubling. But I think it kind of reflects the process that we've kind of morphed to now in many instances. The whole hiring process has become less formal, less personal, I think. You know, it's too easy to go online, set up an account with, let's say, Indeed. You see a job you like, just click, yeah, you know, without really researching it, without really engaging. So, you know, I think many, many young people, specifically if we're talking about millennials and so forth, I mean, many young people kind of just look at it as another step. Hey, I'm looking at opportunities, click, 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 and I'll pick and choose what I want.
And maybe I won't show up if it doesn't strike me on that day. Okay. Well, I want to ask all of you then, what you think is driving, because John is telling us what may be driving it is a little bit technology driven, that at least in our day, and now we're starting to sort of show our age, job interviews are almost always in person or at least over the phone, as opposed to just click this, click this, click this, you've submitted stuff, et cetera. So you might
get... But Evan, even the process, you responded with a letter, with an email,
sure,
with a phone call.
Absolutely. So some of those basic steps are changing, favoring technology in a way that makes it less personal and a little bit more sterile to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
And so maybe it's inevitable that in a new technology generation, there'd be some level of so-called ghosting. Mm-hmm. Patrick, are there other reasons that you think might be fueling this?
Yeah, I think a lot of it has to do with actually the quality of the jobs, you know, and like even though there may be more jobs available, you know, I mean, Mary and I were talking about this in the lobby, you know, I doubt people are doing this from, you know, high paid jobs with great benefits, you know, like, and there's a crucial point to that. I obviously don't have the data, but I did read the article. But, you know, these are mostly like low paid jobs, I would assume. You know, if you've got, you know, if you're making $28,000, you've got a $5,000 deductible on your insurance and you have a better offer, you know, where you've got a copay plan, like what's, you know, why would you, you know, not jump out at the first opportunity? And that's, I think there's, you know, it's the quality of the jobs and the benefits and how difficult it is to get, you know, to get a job that pays well and, you know, provides for you, that is making people feel less loyalty to their employers, which, you know, and it becomes a fulfilling cycle where employees, you know, don't feel loyalty to their employees. I think it's just a degradation of loyalty between the employer and the employer on both sides.
Okay. Is that a commentary on politics, policy, you know, our economy?
Now you're getting me in trouble. I think it's policy, but policy of employers. You know, they've just, you know, it's as it becomes easier to outsource jobs. You know, I don't know if you guys read that New York Times piece about the janitor at Kodak. You know, I think it was like a year ago, about how, you know, the woman who was the CIO of Kodak, she started out as a janitor. And, you know, she used her education benefits and her health insurance to, you know, eventually, you know, to really advance as far as you can that job. And because so many, you know, so many people are contracted out, so many people are outsourced, like there's not, you know, a lot of opportunities for advancement at these big companies unless you're doing a core competency. And I think that's where a lot of this comes from, is that, you know, everything is so much more siloed, you know, in terms of there's not really a lot of cross opportunities for, like, I'm going to get into the ground floor of this company and work my way up. So people really are just ready to jump ship for the first better opportunity.
So in other words, if we have a society where it is common for employers to seek ways to not have to deal with paying benefits, to keep mostly full-time workers really part-time by technicality, this is going to be part kind of a side effect?
Yeah, that's there's only so many times you can slap, you know, you can depress pay and, you know, and look for as many ways as possible to give your employees less for doing the same work before they're going to, you know, you start looking for other gigs or think less of, you know, the employer as a whole.
Okay. Mary, you agree with them?
Not necessarily. I've worked, I spent a great deal of time working for an outsourcing company, and a lot of the times when companies make the decision to outsource, it's pieces of their business that are not necessarily the most strategic, and they don't, there's still the chance. So I don't know enough about Kodak's business, but I would assume that they still have ways available for their smaller you know, there are entry-level positions for them to move through the process.
Yeah, no, it's not, I'm not disagreeing with that. It's just that, you know, 10 and 20 years ago, the people who mowed the lawns, the people who, you know, cleaned the bathrooms, the secretaries and the admins, you know, those were Kodak employees with full benefits. And now if you
Or just employees, generally speaking.
Yeah, like they weren't...
You picked one company, but really, across the
side, they were
more likely to have benefits, more likely to be full-time.
Yeah, and now, you know, if you look, all of those are usually temps or employed by an outside agency, so there's not the same opportunities for the same benefits and advancement. So,
well, it sounds like we're talking about, you know, a company's culture in the way that they treat their employees and the meaningful engagement and relationships that are staying. And I think that that, you know, could be at any level or any size.
Yeah, just that's,
you know,
that's the one
so
example
forth.
I picked. It wasn't.
Certainly. You know, and we've found kind of, you know, the anecdotal stories that we've heard about at Rochester Works and our business services team is typically the stories of ghosting that we've heard are typically on the low pay, minimal benefits, you know, where there's less to lose. But I think that's all relative. You know what I mean? Because I think as you move up the ladder, you know, an opportunity for an executive is an opportunity for an executive.
And yeah.
So, especially now.
right.
So that leads me into several questions, and I want to turn to our listeners as well. I've got a pile of your feedback already in on various platforms, but if you want to call the program and tell us about your thoughts on job ghosting, whether it's sort of explainable or understandable or ever a good idea, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255 or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. You can email the program connections at WXXI.org. So let me go back around the table. And does that mean the economy is not as strong as some of the leading indicators say that it is? Is this a good economy?
Yes. I would say yes. Patrick was looking at me.
No, I just didn't want to go first.
Absolutely.
It's inarguably a good economy, but, you know, is a good economy good for, you know, the average person? You know, I think, you know, if you take your, you know, random person without a college degree, is the economy that strong for them? You know, are they still just like stringing together multiple side hustles? It's inarguably a great economy if you're, you know, an upper middle class professional with a white collar job. But I just, you know, the people.
But that's not most Americans.
Yeah.
So for most Americans, is it a good economy?
In terms of social mobility and advancement, no, I wouldn't say.
Okay.
It's a great economy, yes, hands down. There are more jobs open than there are unemployed people. That's the fact. Now, the biggest challenge from a staffing standpoint is skilled labor. So a lot of the positions like machinist is an example, or even accountants, and I don't want to put them two in the same category.
You're going to get a bunch of hate calls from accountants.
It's definitely different, different dynamics and different skills that are needed for those positions, but they are skilled positions. And it's very difficult at this point in time because a lot of our middle class, to your point, Patrick, they looked past the skilled labor trade and they didn't push their kids to go to skilled, to trade school, or to get into an apprentice program. So we're looking at a huge gap right now. And so for anyone that is looking to work on the industrial side, there's lots of opportunity.
Okay. John?
Yeah, I think it's a strong and good economy, but I think it's also a changing economy. And I think, you know, the skill sets, I mean, we have at Rochester Works, you know, we have different grants where we have one that works with the long-term unemployed, and we have individuals that are involved in that program that have extensive years of experience and skill. But sometimes the new, I put that in quotes, you know, the new opportunities that are out there, employers aren't as eager or willing to look at this individual that has that type of a history. They're looking for something new and fresh and,
yes,
and adaptable and so forth. And so I think it challenges the job seekers to market themselves differently, to look at and really sell or share, rather than I'm a manager. You know, here's my skill set. Here are the things that I can do. And I think Mary had mentioned, brought up apprenticeship. And you know, we're seeing and you're hearing more of that at the national level. And you know, that's a great example of, where you can bring somebody in. There's a structure. There's a pathway. People can see, skill gain, can see increase in responsibility, increase in pay, and so mm-hmm. forth. So that could, potentially be, one way to address this ghosting, scenario.
Well, let me grab a phone call. The phone's ringing here, but there's a lot that we've got to work through here. This is a very interesting discussion, not just on job ghosting, but what it says about the economy and what it says about the state of the satisfaction of workers. So let's grab Anna Liss first. Anna's on the line with us. She's the managing director for Greater Rochester Enterprise. Thanks for calling in.
Hi, Evan. Of course. Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just wanted to make a quick comment. Data that we look at GRE and based on anecdotal feedback we get from companies in the region, Rochester actually scores pretty high in terms of workforce quality and low rates of turnover. And one big tech employer in the region in particular, they have offices in the Boston area and in New York City. They report out of all of their locations, they have the longest tenured employees here in Rochester. And by and large, that speaks more so in the tech industries where we're seeing the most growth. But I just wanted to make that point. I think it's the ghosting trend is a lot more pronounced in regions where you've got a lot more competition in the mm-hmm. workforce, in the labor market. So like if you're a software engineer in San Francisco, you're a lot more likely to be hopping from one thing to the next or ghosting out on an interview than if you're in Rochester and the opportunities mm-hmm. are strong but not so robust.
Okay.
And I can take my comment off the air.
Yeah. Okay. So Anna, thank you for that. And mm-hmm. it's an interesting, that is a different perspective than what Patrick brought up earlier. The ghosting that you are talking about are workers who are tired of not getting benefits, can't get full time, but they want you to work 30 hours. You don't feel like you've got a pretty high ceiling for pay. And that's frustrating. Anna is talking about markets like San Francisco, where the opportunities may be so good, or at least so robust in certain sectors, that it's easy to hop from one better opportunity to another. And that's a different thing, isn't
that
it?
That is a different thing, but that does happen. My dad is a software architect in Baltimore, and when I told him I was going to be on for this, he's like, that just happened to us last week. We had a tester show up. It took us 3 days to figure out he wasn't coming back.
Mary's cringing over there, but it sounds very relatable.
Yes, absolutely. From a different market perspective. So my company also staffs outside of Rochester in other areas within the state. And it's absolutely more common outside of Rochester because there's a lot of the same playing ground.
Okay. Well, Jerry in Pittsford has an idea about what she thinks about the process of ghosting itself. Go ahead, Jerry.
Hi, Evan. I feel that ghosting is a horrible thing to do. And I think it's also very short-sighted. Because say you were just talking about people in the same sector. If you want another job in that same sector, your managers who you just ghosted move around as well. And what happens if they recognize your name? That guy never called me back to say yes, to say no to the job. And then one other aspect, I've had sort of ghosting on the other side. I remember a long time ago, I had a talk to somebody about a job. I hadn't even really applied for it because it was just a friend from school who said, hey, talk to them about it. Had a long interview. The guy never got back to me to say no.
Yeah.
It just seems so rude.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, short, like I said.
Jerry brings up a...
Thank you, Jerry. Yeah, go ahead, Jerry, John. Right? Yeah.
She brings up an excellent point. I mean, we hear that all the time from the job seeker side,
yeah.
is they get so frustrated with this process because, again, there's not that personal connection. There's not mm-hmm. that phone call, that follow-up that's necessarily there. And in fairness, I mean, I think I read recently for every teaching position, there's 300 to 400, applicants that apply. And so, the expectation of that personal follow-up and connection is a challenge. But we hear constantly from job seekers where they say, what the heck? I put in all this effort. I did all the things you asked me to do. And crickets.
Yeah,
it's a two-sided.
That's the two-way street, right? When everyone's talking about how many times, you upload your resume and then you spend 45 minutes putting, you know, what's in the context of your resume into 75 different tiny boxes, you know.
Tiny boxes. Yeah. So true.
And then after all that, you know, they never call you. And, yeah. And how is that any different than, I mean, obviously it is a little different, but I think it's two sides of the same coin there.
Absolutely. And to Jerry's point, and also, you know, from a long-term perspective, from an HR perspective, there's nothing more frustrating when a hiring manager doesn't get back to you with feedback regarding an applicant, because you do spend so much time finding the right person to put in front of them to interview. And they may go through one or two interviews, maybe even three interviews, and hear nothing back. And from an HR standpoint, we are equally as frustrated as the applicant, because we are looking for that feedback. So that is a very good point that Jerry brought up.
Yeah, thank you, Jerry. Well, Isabel writes to us to say that some of ghosting is about teaching employers a lesson. She says ghosting is just a neoliberal strike, a strike of one, because there is hardly any organized labor anymore, and working conditions and pay have gotten worse in my lifetime, not better. That's from Isabel. What do you think, Patrick?
Isabel's correct.
Just drop the mic.
Well, I mean, that's pretty concise way of what I've been saying for 27 minutes here, you know, where the behavior of ghosting isn't the problem, it's the symptom of the problem. And that's that working conditions for the average person have not gotten better. They've gotten considerably worse.
Well, that's the other point that Jerry brought up that is a very valid point. We live in a small environment here in Rochester. Everyone knows somebody, especially when you talk about working in telecommunications or, you know, a certain vertical. You can get away with just about anything at work, but not showing up is remembered. It's marked on your chart. I mean, that's something that will follow you for the rest of your career.
Is that true, John? Would you advise workers that if you ghost, if you don't respond, either, you know, you show up for one interview, or you don't show up for an interview at all, or you don't take the job when it's offered and you don't give them an explanation, or you don't give 2 weeks, that can follow you?
I suppose so. I mean, I would never advise anybody to not, you know, provide that feedback or follow up. I think it's always valuable and important. I'm a baby boomer, so, you know, I guess that's how we were raised, you know, and brought up, and that's the expectation that I have. The workshops that we offer at Rochester Works and helping job seekers and working with businesses and so forth, you know, we always emphasize the need for communication and meaningful dialogue, you know, because it's beneficial to all. But I think, you know, the other thing, too, is as I listen to folks, you know, talk about this, too, you know, we were raised, and I'll use just Kodak as an example, you know, locally in Rochester, you know, you had the big three. You had Kodak, Xerox, Bausch & Lomb. And, you know, growing up, you know, in the 70s and 80s, I mean, the expectation was that you'd go to work and you'd be there for your lifetime, you know, and that's clearly not the case that today. And so, you know, I think young people that, you know, or even more mature who are in the marketplace, I think that they don't have that same connection, that same commitment. And I don't think it's given back to them either by virtue of the way that our economy and our businesses operate. But at the same point, you know, I think they don't look at the negative side of it, because, you know what, there's another opportunity down the road. I'm going to do this for however many years, however many months, and I'm going to move on. I mean, isn't that part of what the millennial, you know, generation is labeled, that, you know,
Hate Patrick? I don't understand.
I don't. Patrick.
No, I have been through about 7 different career paths in the past like 8 years. So he's not wrong.
I'm kidding. But no, I mean, John's making some salient points here. Daniel Paquette in The Washington Post says, though, this isn't just one generation. So let me read for what Paquette writes in the Post. Quote, I'm hearing from workers of all ages, and particularly older workers, who are fed up with how their rights, their pay, their benefits packages have dwindled over time. You know, as power has shifted in favor of employers and the relationship between employee and employer has weakened, you see more people work as contractors than full-time staffers, mm-hmm. and they just don't have that same tie to their manager that they might have had in the past, end quote. Right. John, what do you think?
Well, he says it better than I do.
So it's hard to argue with that. All right, so if we agree that trend is true across the board, no matter, certainly we're going to see more ghosting for younger workers, but there's frustration with a level of workers at all levels, all ages, when it comes to benefits packages, pay, et cetera. What happens to change this dynamic? Is this just the economy that we live in now, John, and this is the trend we're going? Or are we painting too dark a picture? Is it better than what we're painting here? What do you think?
You know, I think sometimes we overreact, and I'm not saying we shouldn't, but I think sometimes we do. And I think the reality is, at least from my perspective, is that we've always had, and for lack of another term, you know, good employers, bad employers. And I don't mean bad in necessarily a bad way. But when you compare, and I think there's one thing that as I was, talking with some staff about coming on the show and talking about this subject matter, one of my staff shared with me that there's a study I think MIT is involved with, and you could probably Google it, you know, and they're doing this piece where they're starting to offer these monthly digests where they're trying to kind of educate and inform folks. I think, you know, whether you're a job seeker or an employer, on the matter, and talk about, you know, whether it's communication, whether it's technology, what roles all of these things play. But I think more importantly, what they're also getting at is that compare yourself to your competition. You know, how is your wage? How are your wages? How are your benefits? How is your treatment? What is it? You know, what are the opportunities for advancement and stuff? And a lot of that's just flat out objective, you know, assessment. And so at the very least, if you're doing that, you'll understand where you fit or where you fall within your industry, your business. I mean, the reality is smaller businesses don't always have the resources that a larger company will have. But that doesn't mean that they can't have meaningful engagement. That doesn't mean that they can't have optimistic, positive, culture that is compassionate and engaging.
Sure. So part of your prescription is for the employers, cultivate that in different and however
Certainly.
You can. That's
Certainly.
A competitive advantage. If you're known as a place that is loyal, mm-hmm. that is caring for its employees, I've said in this program before, I'm amazed at how many sort of just cold and rough people end up in management in various companies. Not here, I'm thrilled to say that, and I say that very honestly. But I, in a long ago past job, I had an employer walk into a meeting and tell everybody, I heard that morale's down. Well, here's something for your morale. If you don't like working here, there's the door.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought that did not really inspire morale to rise there. So what you're saying is, you know, you've got an opportunity no matter your company.
Yeah, I think it's personal. And I'll share just one scenario.
Sure.
Recently, a staff member and I went out and met with a local company. And so they were struggling to identify workers. And so we went out there and we sat down with them and went through the normal routine that you do. What do you pay? What are your hours? You know, how's transportation? You know, is it available to this location? So forth. And everything that they shared with us, you know, the wage I thought was competitive and decent. The benefits were wonderful. They had a neat, bonus package and so forth. The environment, from what I could see, seemed to be very positive and good. And so we just didn't understand it. And then all of a sudden, as we got into the discussion, they talked about because they had such a strong need for people that they needed to mandate that the staff that they had on board work overtime. And so in theory, you know, at least initially, they think, well, overtime, they're getting time and a half and stuff. But what ultimately happened, it wasn't that the employees didn't appreciate all that or didn't want to be there. The problem was is they were burning themselves out.
Mm-hmm.
And so guess what? You know, they're just... At some point, they're going to hit a wall and they're going to walk away. You know, so it kind of, you know, keeps that snowballs that problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think, you know, that's a whole nother dynamic that comes into play with today's economy and the demand and not being able to fill all of your openings as well.
Mm-hmm.
Mary, so John's idea, looking at individual companies as having a competitive advantage of showing more loyalty, of creating better conditions.
Mm-hmm.
What do you see is changing this dynamic where people are frustrated with their situations? Do you think that we're painting too dark a picture of the economy? You know, what's going to make changes here? Or maybe things aren't as... Do we need to make change? Do we accept things how they are?
I've seen a lot of positive changes over the last year, and a lot of that has been through working with Greater Rochester Enterprise. Our local community is starting to invest, like I said, in skilled labor. But to John's point, yes. So before I take on a new client, I walk through their facility, and the very first thing that I ask them is, how do you sell your company to your candidates? How do you make working at this place more desirable than, you know, the other company down the street? They will give me examples of the opportunity to work overtime. A lot of the companies, it's mandatory overtime, to John's point. To us, yeah, making more per hour or bringing more money in our paycheck is great, but to them, they're getting burnt out. also, a lot of companies, one company, one of my clients in particular, they're starting to offer benefits from day one versus the way it was having to wait 90 days or, you know, 6 months. Some companies, you have to wait 2 years. You're going to see a lot of that change with the economy. So benefits are important. A lot of my clients have recently raised their base salary, not for minimum wage, but to give you an example, we have some assemblers that are making $12 an hour. Our companies, or some of our clients, have raised that to $15 an hour. So $3 more per hour for an assembler type position. It's just amazing. It's unheard of. They are proactively going out to do that, to raise the wage. From my standpoint, from an HR standpoint, I believe the onboarding process needs to be better to tie in John's point of losing that communication with your employee. Have a check-in. Send an email the day before they start to welcome them or give them a call. Stop down at their desk to see how they're doing for the day. Make sure that everything's situated so that you do have that personal connection. Check in with them a week later or a month later. Have something in place so that their onboarding process is a little longer so that their experience can be better and that they won't, to Patrick's point, feel like they are not valued.
Okay. Patrick, do these prescriptions work for you?
Yeah, that's all there is to it, right? Like, if you want, just make
he
people...
He just wants to matter.
Yeah, make people feel better at work, yeah. Pay them more, right. And make sure their benefits are better. It's not hard. Employers just don't want to do it.
Yeah, and it's not a millennial thing either. Everybody likes to feel important.
Well, I have a follow-up that you're not going to like, but I'm going to ask you anyway, okay? Because I think there, it does at least merit asking the question, are these prescriptive ideas valuable, or are they too sort of limited, siloed, you might say, to small individual examples of companies that might do things differently, but systemically you're not going to see sort of nationwide systemic change without some real fundamental changes?
I think the easiest thing, this entire conversation is completely different if your benefits and health, specifically healthcare, are not tied to work. And, you know, that just is so much of, you know, people's agita about their jobs and things they can't stand is knowing that, you know, they won't be able to pay for their doctor's appointments for their children if they leave that job. And, you know, there are proposals out there. I'm not going to shill on the program. But, you know, some form where your healthcare and your ability to provide, you know, doctor's care for your children is not directly tied to your continued employment, I think would be the easiest thing, you know, to... you know, both boost morale, and I think employers would eventually find it easier too, you know?
I cannot tell you how often I hear from people who say, I got a high deductible, I don't want to go to the doctor for this, don't want to go for this. You know, I probably should, don't really feel like, you know, I'd have to pay out of pocket.
Before I was at Brockport, I was on a $5,000 deductible, and even after that, it was 50-50 coverage, you know? So unless I, like, died, basically, I was out $12,500, which I didn't have. And, you know, that's so much of people's, you know, worries and anxieties is just, you know, the lack of ability to, you know, that they're going to suffer a true medical crisis and not have the ability to pay for it.
Okay. All right. So I've got a lot of ideas here, and I've got a lot of feedback from listeners as we talk about job ghosting, the state of the economy, the behavior of workers, and what it says about the jobs that are available or how they feel about the economy, whether it's sort of a generational change, is it tied to technology? I think it's sort of all of these things, but a really interesting conversation, and we're hearing a lot of feedback from you. You can call the program if you like, 844-295-TALK. It's toll-free, 844-295-8255, or 263-WXXI if you're in Rochester, 263-9994. Have you ever just not shown up for an interview, or would you not show up for a job? What would you do if you found out your kid did that, or another family member or a friend? Does it make sense to you? John Primo is here, the Director of Community and Business Services for Rochester Works. You just heard Patrick Coyle, who's a graduate assistant at SUNY Brockport. And Mary Macbeth is a branch manager for Imagine Staffing Technology. Back to your feedback next. Coming up in our second hour, young adult Americans and teenagers are having less sex than their parents and grandparents did. A lot less. Why is that? We're going to have a conversation next hour that's not just about sex. It's connected to when and whether to have kids, when and whether to get married, and how society is changing in ways that might surprise you. That's next hour. Welcome back to Connections. Before I dive into your emails, I'm going to make Patrick Coyle share the story he shared on the break right now. What is this ghosting story that you haven't shared yet?
It's just the best ghosting story I've experienced. It was summer 2014. I worked at a remote summer camp up in the Adirondacks. It was actually boat access only, no cell phone access. And so legitimately, the camp was on an island, and you could only get there, you know, the staff would ferry you over. And one of the kids quit in the middle of the night and just disappeared. And then 5 days later, and nobody knew how. As best we could tell, he had an accomplice, and they stole a canoe, took it across back to the parking lot, and he just drove off. But like, he sent the camp an email like 3 days later saying, like, "Hey, I'm not dead. I just didn't feel like working."
And you called him a kid, but he was not a camper. It was a worker.
He was my age. He was like 20. He was like probably 21, 22 at the time. And that's just the single greatest ghosting I've ever. Like, it was impressive. They should have paid him a full salary and bonus just for the audacity.
It's like Alcatraz, huh?
Yeah.
To escape in the middle of the night.
The job wasn't that bad. It was pretty fun.
Wow. Hopefully, maybe he's listening.
Yeah, I don't think
so. It's not you, is it?
No, I swear.
This is not one of those asking for a friend situations.
Yeah.
Let me read some of your feedback here. Okay, Saj says on Twitter, "It's not great when it comes to ghosting, and I wouldn't do it, but employers do it all the time, even after they interview you. You are lucky to get even a confirmation of application email these days, let alone the basic respect of communicating decisions." John, when you mentioned some jobs have 200-300 applicants for one position, is there an obligation at some point to employers? Is it unrealistic for employers to be able to get back to you on every applicant?
You know, I guess it's all in how their system or how they have their resources set up. I mean, some people have that standard, reply. You know, it's not one that I encourage, but at the very least, I think it acknowledges. I think from what we hear too is that job seekers just appreciate that they know that you even got their application or the resume or what have you. So, you know, that would be kind of, you know, maybe not the best, but a simple way.
Yeah.
So at the very least, I know I'm not in some dark black hole here.
Yeah, just the closure of like, "Hey, like, we looked at your resume, you know, we're not going to move forward. Thanks for your time." Like, that's such an easy step, and just so many positions and companies just don't do it. Okay. So you just left in limbo of like, "Oh, I did send, you know, I sent this resume and this resume and this resume out, and I'm just waiting to see, you know, if any of them come through, but, you know, your application's been in the trash for 4 weeks now."
Okay. Mary, what do you think?
Well, I always offer the advice. So first of all, we take it very important. Anytime someone applies to one of our positions, they absolutely get contacted by one of our recruiters. That's number one. Number two, I have always put the onus back on. So when I have friends, they always ask me for advice. They'll say, "I haven't heard from so-and-so. You know, what would you recommend I do?" I always recommend following up. And you should really take on that responsibility. And I don't have any other reasoning behind it besides my personal opinion is to take on that responsibility to follow up and show who you are. Because outside of your resume, you really are just paper to them unless you make that connection.
Yeah.
All right, let me read a couple more. Colin on Twitter says, "It feels like a double standard. If a company doesn't call you back, it's just business. If an individual doesn't respond, it's unprofessional. I've never done it because you can never know what can come back to haunt you in the professional world. Also, just, you know, common courtesy. It doesn't take a whole lot of energy to say no, but thank you." Christopher says, "Employers can let employees go at any time they want for any reason and replace that employee in a week. Mm-hmm. Most employers in 2019 do not care about their employees and treat them like property. People need to do what's best for themselves." So there's a couple of perspectives that have some similarity there. So let's kind of go back to Colin's point about what you do can come back to haunt you in the professional world. Mm-hmm. I think, Mary and John were saying earlier, be careful, especially in a smallish town like Rochester, where it seems like, you know, managers can move job to job. That problem can follow you. But can a bad reference hurt you as bad as the legends tell you? And we got one shaking their head and one nodding over here. We're going to tangle on this. Go ahead, Mary.
Okay. So to take a step back professionally on where I've come from.
Sure.
I worked at a local company here for almost 10 years. I started within the HR organization. And when the company started, it was started here in Rochester, New York. It was considered a lead generation company, and people would literally kind of to Patrick's point, come in to make phone calls and get sales.
Yeah.
So a lot of it was an outbound calling. Well, fast forward 10, 15 years, it became a a massive company, a multi-billion dollar company that had 80,000 employees globally, people in Rochester were applying, and they might have worked there 10 years ago, but their HR record stated that they no-called, no-showed, which today is called ghosting. Mm-hmm. And we were not able to, from a recruiting standpoint, move forward with the interview. We couldn't even set the interview if they had been in our system as working with us before. And maybe, to Patrick's point, we would have to do some investigating, and hopefully that manager was still working for our company. We could get that interview for that person. But 9 out of 10 times, we had to walk away, even if they were a skilled person.
But when it comes to references, when it comes to how it follows you, you know, people fear a bad reference. Mm-hmm. Should they fear it as much as... Why were you shaking your head earlier?
I just don't think it's going to follow you around for that long. Like, obviously, you shouldn't do it. Like, it should be like a last, like worst case scenario. But like, if you're, you know, a warehouse guy and you just decide to stop showing up, like, it's not going to get sent to your secret file in the principal's office. Like, I don't know.
But if you apply for a job, you have to list where's your last employer.
Yeah.
And they call and they say, yeah, this guy just stopped showing. You don't think that hurts you?
I don't think people call references nearly as much as. People
Ooh,
let on.
Mary's going to disagree
well, yeah,
with that.
Mary's clearly very good at her job.
Oh. Okay, John.
I'm not going to say that.
All right, John, adjudicate this one. Do people call the references?
Yes, I think. But, you know, I would question, too, though. I mean, in today's world with the references, I mean, you have to be really savvy to get a correct or a solid, you know, reference. And when I say that, I mean an honest one. You know what I mean? It's too easy today to say, yep, he worked for me for this date and this time.
Yeah, so many
so
companies
forth.
Do that, right? Where they, yeah, like, right. All they'll do is just confirm dates, right? Like, that's a super
Legally,
common
Legally, that's
practice.
All they can
yeah.
do.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. Do you have any recourse to bad references, John, if you think that they're being unfair?
Not really. I mean, other than... challenging them, you know, legally or something, but I'm not sure that you do.
Okay.
Well, here's what's scary to John's point as far as the onboarding process. The exit interview doesn't happen any longer either, so it's a matter of checking a box. Did this person work here or not? And when you apply, you're automatically, because you're not having that human interface, just set aside.
Yeah.
You know, it's interesting, too, though. You know, I think more and more, and Mary, you may know this better than all of us, but, you know, people are now looking at social media. They're looking at all those other. So there's a plethora of information if you're willing to do the digging to find out, you know, or get a sense, you know, I'm not saying whether it's fair or not, but again, it's out there. And
I really had to clean up my social media feed once Evan started following me. I was like, oh, I got to impress him now. You can't just be cursing
well,
up a storm.
Button it up, baby.
Yeah.
So let's see here. On Twitter, Charlie says, here's how to quit your job like a pro. And it's a picture of a card, a sorry for your loss card. And you open it up and it says, it's me. I leave in 3 weeks. Sincerely, Todd. Or whatever your name is. A sorry for your loss card. But they're saying... You know, it's important to at least offer that. Well, Chelsea writes to us and says, I found out that the guy who had the job before me dropped dead at 33 of a preventable illness because they wouldn't let him take time off. Set your own schedule turned into 14-hour days. As soon as I signed the offer letter for my new job, I left my badge on the desk and I just left. There was so much else wrong, but those were the highlights. In that case, with Chelsea making, she didn't even feel like she was going to say anything. She just walked out of the building and never turned back. What do you think?
What I think is that company may also have a reputation. So that's another piece to Patrick's point.
Yeah, people aren't ghosting Wegmans and Costco. You know?
We don't know that, but maybe.
Wegmans, call us. Is anybody ghosting you? But to the point here, if I were the employer, I actually would want to hear that.
Yeah.
If Chelsea is my employee, and I understand exactly what she's saying, if you see someone being mistreated and literally dying, it's hard to expect her to stay there. But I think you gotta kind of stomp your foot a little and say, I want you to know why I'm leaving. This is not okay. I think this is the problem here is workers don't feel like they have power. Workers feel like they're constantly the ones in an imbalance of power situation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, like I was in a very similar situation where, you know, it was a small company. It was pretty poorly run. And we all knew that, you know, there was nothing, you know, the managers were either, you know, sleeping together or related, not at the same time. And, you know, there was just...
That's the next hour.
Yeah.
It actually is.
there was just nothing that could be done. You know, we knew that it wasn't a great work environment, but we also knew that no complaint we could do to any, you know, we could give to anybody would have any sort of repercussions because, you know, the management has to care.
Right.
You know, Evan, I think there's a couple of dynamics too, though. I mean, it's one thing to be a brand new employee where you don't have any history, you don't have any, you know, relationship really, versus an employee that maybe has been there for a little while and maybe has that understanding. I think we all would say, yeah, if I'm a business or I'm an employer and, you know, we all want to know, we all want to have that communication. We might not agree with one another, but at the very least, you can sever it in that fashion. But I think, you know, when you have a new individual coming on board, like in this instance, you know, this person came on board the very first day, you know, they don't have that level of comfort that maybe others, I don't even, comfort's probably not the right word, but, you know, they don't have that relationship there and they don't know what's acceptable, what's not per se.
Now, if we look at the financially and based upon SHRM statistics, it's about $5,000 per person before they even bring you on, the amount that the company has paid and invested to bring you on. So it really is that personal connection that they're missing versus an understanding that the company really wants them to be there. So I don't know. I don't know if that point made sense, but nonetheless, it really is about making a connection. And like I said, you know, if you send that welcome email the first day, maybe mandate it from your hiring manager because that's the person they're going to be working with. Chances are they have really not built a relationship with that person anyway. They've built the person or the relationship with HR. Mm-hmm. But if they have the hiring manager, maybe give them a plan of sending them a welcome letter, make sure that they make their first day is good.
All right, let me get an email and a phone call here. Adam says, bravo, Patrick, healthcare, healthcare, healthcare. Employers, you don't want people to ghost you. Start giving them the benefits they deserve. From Adam.
Yeah, and even, you know, if you want to look bigger picture, you know, I mean, think about how much more opportunities you'd have for entrepreneurship. You know, if you think about how much creativity is being stifled just by people who stay in jobs solely because it provides them healthcare.
Which could be a completely separate topic because healthcare is so expensive.
Patrick's going, you don't say if you ever talk about healthcare.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying not to get political on the show. It's really hard.
Businesses would go out of business if they paid for healthcare. I mean, way they used to.
Not touching that one.
You're going to let that one go?
Yeah.
Okay.
We only got 8 more minutes.
Bonnie in Rochester is next on the phone. Go ahead, Bonnie.
Yeah, hi. I just wanted to add a couple things. One is that this needs a whole thing into itself. Is you know what's happening in the public sector, that for many, many years now, that the privatization of these services, and it can be very kind of slow and creepy or fast at times, and it needs, you know, full program to really discuss that because, it, as I say, it's not always real visible. The example I will use, however, is you're probably familiar because this was covered in a number of medias about the situation the county is involved with now with pre-K evaluations for kids who might have some kind of disability and need, you know, that professional direction. And this also, and it, that piece, of course, the county saying they don't have the money and the resources are not there. And when I went to the hearing that they recently had and spoke about it because I have some experience with this. And it was amazing. The short-term little things they were going to do to fix it, even the people who were involved as professionals giving some of the services said, you know, this is ridiculous. It's not going to work. It's a much deeper problem, which is why I use the word privatization to begin with. And the other thing is really, I was surprised that even I talked to some of the staff, you know, like the occupational therapists, the physical therapists that they use on kind of a contract basis. And yes, people like to have flexibility in their hours. But when I talked to these people, I was surprised. They don't even get the same coverage that people in the county get. They have no retirement. The health care is very weak. And so they're being like used for incredible, and they are the ones that provide most in the current situation in the county, provide most of the professional services on kind of a consultant basis. office. There's no real connection to anything that would give them those kind of benefits. And so something, those kind of things should not be happening because it's destroying the systems that we that are so critically needed to preserve the quality of services, and it's not happening. And most people don't even have a clue that it's this kind of thing.
Bonnie, thank you for the phone call. Some thoughts from our guests. Anything you want to add there?
That's just really important. You know, the gradual rollback of the public sector, and it's happening on all fronts. You know, you wouldn't believe the amount of, you know, colleges, particularly that I was just reading last night about how many colleges have scaled back professorships in terms of just funding PhD programs and just allowing graduate assistants to teach, you know, full-time classes. And it not only is it, you know, ruining the market for professors, it's, you know, it's creating all these PhD grads that are, you know, it's that are competing for this ever smaller circle of full-time jobs, you know, and that's just, you know, the gradual rollback of public service is a huge crisis.
All right. There are some final thoughts from Patrick. 30 seconds. What's the takeaway you want listeners to have when it comes to job ghosting, Mary?
Don't do it.
Don't
do it. No, honestly, I am a firm believer of being part of a community. And even though you may feel that you want to stick it to your manager or your employer, at the end of the day, it's really on you.
Even if it's a for-profit university.
I think it was a contractor for a for-profit university.
Okay. John Primo.
Yeah, I would say for all you job seekers out there, if you want to look at, you know, kind of learn and strategize around what opportunities there are to communicate or effectively apply or respond or what have you, come on down to Rochester Works. We got some wonderful workshops, wonderful sessions where, you know, folks can kind of learn how to best approach this whole scenario to make it a win-win for each.
Thank you for being here. And 10 seconds, final thoughts from you.
I just agree with what John says. I'm fortunate enough to have, you know, known the work Rochester Works does in my current position. They really do great work, and it's a fantastic resource.
Thanks, Pat.
Thanks for being here. All three of our guests are John Primo, Director of Community and Business Services for Rochester Works. Thanks again, John. Always nice having
you.
Thank you. Nice having Mary Macbeth, a Branch Manager for Imagine Staffing Technology. Mary, thank you.
Thank you, Evan.
And Patrick Coyle, professional job ghoster. That's not true. He's going to put that on his...
That's on my resume. I'm making the business cards now.
Don't you dare. Thanks for being here. Nice talking to you again. Short break, more connections coming up.